Welcome to another wonderful episode of Simulant. And if it isn't a wonderful episode, it doesn't matter, because we can always go back and change it. Yes, today we are taking a look at time travel in cinema. From cars to phone boxes, from time doors to crazy contraptions, from rocket sleds to travelling butt naked, we are going back in time. My name is Adam Marsh, and I am joined by Simulant's resident expert, Daryl Buxton. How are you today, tomorrow, and yesterday, Daryl?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, Adam, but there's just one thing worrying me.
What's worrying you?
What year is it?
Daryl of the future, coming back to correct Seelix errors. So we're talking time travel movies today. I thought it'd be a fun way of looking at different ways that cinema has. Initially, I thought, well, the DeLorean in Back to the Future is a quite unusual time travel. It would be fun to talk about unusual time travel devices. And then I started looking at it, I thought, they're all unusual. It's not a really standard way of travelling through time, I guess.
Yeah. I suppose, you know, the first one to mention, the biggie, is the TARDIS.
Oh, that's very close. Yeah.
Which is a sort of staple of British TV through Doctor Who, and as you and Steve Hatcher covered the Doctor Who movies on a Cinemate podcast a few months ago. So what do we need to say about the TARDIS? Do we need to tell people about that? I'm sure everyone knows what it is and how strange it is, but I think
it's an interesting, I mean, it's become an interesting device, and we were talking about this before we started recording, about how there's two types of time travel movies. There's the time travel movies that are concerned with the process of travelling through time and the device and the plot is built around that. And then you have other ones, like a lot of Doctor Who episodes, where the TARDIS basically is the transportation device to take them to a story that happens in the past or happens in the future. It's not really about time travel as such.
Fans of Doctor Who and all the similar shows, you know, Quantum Leap and things like that, they know the setup. You know, when you're on to sort of episode 78 or whatever, or four seasons in, you already know that it's about time travel. So the writers don't need to focus on that. They can just use whatever mechanics they have in the background, you know, and to get characters from one place and time to another. And what I like about Doctor Who is the time travel devices, and the TARDIS in particular, are right at the focus of what we're talking about today, or what we were planning to talk about, which is how weird time machines can be.
Yeah, I mean, with the TARDIS, I guess it's similar to things like the way Star Trek 4 does it. It's a ship.
Yeah.
It's a ship of the time ship, I guess,
yeah,
the way
yeah.
to look at it. Which is, at first I thought, oh, that's not really that unusual, but actually it's not used that often, the idea of a ship travelling, you know, a ship designed to travel through time.
Yeah.
Usually it's like a weird contraption or a car, you know, it's just that's what it does just for that moment. It's not built to be the travelling time ship like the TARDIS is. You've got a similar thing in Legends of Tomorrow on TV, the DC Universe show,
yes,
that has a ship that travels through time. There's not that many in that respect.
No. We were talking earlier before we started recording about the sort of development of time travel in drama, in literature, and how it's come through to film. And we were saying how you've got the hard mechanics of the time travel movie, and you've also got the films that are more romantic based, that are more sort of dramatic, and that focus more on the characters and the situation and the emotional side of it. And That sort of stems back, that obviously, before H.G. Wells wrote The Time Machine, I think authors prior to that hadn't really considered that you could build a piece of equipment to help you travel in time. But I think the concept of time travel was still sort of in the ether, you know, in the literary world. And I think that is what has brought us this legacy of films like Somewhere in Time, where it's all about the romance and even the time travel method is often done as a character falling asleep. You know, you get your sort of Rip Van Winkle sort of thing, or having a dream, or simply willing themselves into another time, or you know, drinking too much and waking up in the wrong time, or taking the wrong drug or whatever. And I think that's happening in films today. It still carries on as a time travel concept. It does stem back to this pre-time machine.
Well, I think that's like a traditionalist view of time travel, I guess. I mean obviously, the concept of time travel is not that new. You know, that maybe 200 years, maybe 250, where the concept of travelling through time was first developed in literature and in popular consciousness.
Yeah, it's fairly recent.
Yeah. So when you think about earlier, and that coincided with the boom of science in the 19th century, you had a massive boom in then what science means that, 1800 compared to 1895 when H.G. Wells' book came out. You know, it's a completely different world, the Industrial Revolution, all that kind of stuff has made science more of a thing. And I think those books that were written in the early part of that century, Van Winkle's, Mark Twain's Connecticut Yankee and King Arthur's Court, they were much more rooted in magic or religion and I say falling asleep and waking up in the future.
There's not even a means to an end there, is there? It's just, I want my character to be in another decade or another century. Snap.
It's done. Exactly. The power of writing. But obviously, as the century passed and more technology came along and new things were happening, the idea that you could build a device that would help you travel through time is probably not as weird and as unusual as it feels now. I think at the time, the amount of devices that were being built that completely revolutionized society. The train, the train was being built in that period. So like, the idea that we can do a time travel.
Yeah. You know? Well, there's your perfect setup there, because you know, once the train's been invented, you know, imaginative writers are thinking, well, trains go through tunnels. What if they came out the other side, and it was 50 years later?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, or I love the idea in time travel fiction where you've got your technology and you go into the past and then the technology doesn't work. This is brilliantly done in Back to the Future Part 3. It's a lovely idea where, you know, you've got all this equipment from the 21st century and suddenly it's useless because of where you've ended up and where it's taken.
Yeah.
What are our favourite weird time machines in the movies?
Well, I think we've got to start with the H.G. Wells time machine and the feature film version of that. That was an unusual contraption, wasn't it? Some sort of steampunk fantasy device that allows you to propel you through time.
Although, again, it's you know, for its day, it's very contemporary. You know, it's sort of what... If you were going to build a time machine in the 1890s, I guess it would have looked like that.
Yeah.
It's only now that we see it as having a sort of period sheen to it, you know.
But it had the one lovely swirls and everything, which obviously it's repeating things like time, so and obviously Austin Powers. can't do a time travel movie talking about Austin Powers, can't we? So you have that the gimmick of the 60s, sort of like swirly lights, it's a trick, man.
Yeah,
kind of time travel.
Sure. Again, that's an interesting one because that was big in the 60s, and there was this sort of combination in 60s fare of, we've got to have the hardware, we've got to have spaceships, or we've got to have a machine or something that the character sits in to go somewhere. But we're also going to bring in the psychedelic elements as well. So is it the machine that's making them travel in time, or is it the LSD?
Yeah.
Or is it the combination?
Oh, is it both? Yeah.
Austin Powers, you mentioned, is interesting because when that character was pitched, the idea in those early films is that he's a character of the 60s. You know, he's supposed to be a spoof of Bond, Matt Helm, Flint, all the 60s guys, you know. And the fact that he can also travel in time is a bit of an afterthought, and it's not always played on throughout the film series.
No, I think that one, he was looking at, you always talk about James Bond being an anachronism, even though Bond's gone on for years and years and years. The idea of taking that 60s Bond and putting him in a modern, as was then, a modern film, and seeing how that character would clash, I guess, in modern times, was the main idea of the story. How they got there,
I know, but yeah, I think because of that, people tend to forget that Austin Powers is a time travel story, you know, or parts of the franchise are. So, but they spoof so much of the 60s stuff. I think we need to add Austin to our list of things to talk about in greater depth.
Yeah, certainly ahead of it. I'm sure there's a new one in the pipeline.
I do hope so. I love them. But so yeah, weird sort of time travelling devices then.
Obviously, Hot Tub Time Machine probably needs a passing reference.
The title says it all.
A time travelling jacuzzi as a device.
Yeah.
Which again taps into the Terminator, because they're semi-naked in a hot tub, and Terminator, you have to travel naked, because no organic drive goes through time.
Yeah. One of my favourites is the British film Frequently Asked Questions About Time Travel, with Chris O'Dowd and Dean Lennox-Kelly, where it's not made entirely clear in the film, but it appears that they're time travelling in a pub gents' toilet. Although Anna Faris plays a character who claims that she is the time machine, that she's got parts of a time machine sort of built inside her, and that she's causing the distortion. So whenever they go off to the gents, they come back, order another pint, and they're like half an hour into the future or something, you know, with all the ensuing chaos that causes throughout the course of the film.
I don't think it's that unusual to go into a gents' toilet and feel like you travel back in time. I think sometimes you go into a gents' toilet and they feel like they haven't been cleaned in 30 years.
Sure.
So, you know.
I think the film sort of plays on that a bit, you know. Mm-hmm. I think it's, I think there's a good reason why they pick the gents' toilet as a time travelling device there. It's something that resonates with a lot of regular book goers.
Just moving away, the Terminator franchise, I'm not a big fan of most of them. Maybe the first one I really like, the second one I like, and then I'm pretty much done then. I've had my fill.
Yeah, but three is good for me, but
I pretty much had my fill by two. But I think the idea that there's a purpose to the time travel. So a lot of the films that we've been talking about, people accidentally propelled through time and are walking around, oh my God, I can't believe I'm here.
They're ending up in places where they don't want to be.
Exactly,
they didn't expect to be.
Yeah.
Here, we've got a target.
Yeah, there's a purpose to the time travel. I think that adds a level of, a purpose and plot. The device becomes part of the storyline.
I think it makes it seem more real and more acceptable. If you've got a character who's actually got an aim, and is heading for a destination,
which is bizarre, because you think like the idea that someone is accidentally propelled through time, then they could be the everyman, and you're seeing the world in the same way as they're seeing. Yeah. Well, actually, it just feels less believable. If time travel was a thing. Yes, you get killer robots going back in the future.
Yes, well, because they're confused, you're confused as an audience member, and it takes you that little bit of time to sort of catch up and figure out what's happening. And meanwhile, half an hour of the film's going by, and you're not quite into it. So it is something that can weaken these films a little bit. And the Terminator gets around that brilliantly by saying, this is what we're going for, this is what we need to do. And more than one character does that as well, you know. Every character in the film has got focus and something that they need to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that adds to the storyline.
And even the ones that can't travel in time know that time travel is a thing, and they use that to their advantage.
And it looks cool.
Yeah.
Also, the device and just like the lighting, I mean, it's very 80s, that in the sort of like, you know, the darkened alleyway and the lights and the mist and stuff.
Yeah. And again, we're not given a lot of technical detail.
Yeah.
We're just given a few blue flashes, a naked man, and that's it. You know?
Yeah, and also when they get to the later films and they do give you more details about the time, it's not very satisfying seeing a big machine and stuff like,
you sort of realise when you see those sequels and you find out more about what's going on. You sort of realise, we don't really need all this. This is happening, you know. Let's get back to the lean qualities of the first two movies, where we know there's something technical going on, but we don't need to understand it. All we need to know is it gets these people or robots or whatever is being propelled from one place and one time to another.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the drama can start.
So what did you think of Tenet last year as a time travel, as a new movie in a time travel?
I think it was such a muddle in terms of the whole movie in general, and the time travel stuff rather got lost within it for me, in that it's a difficult film to talk about, really, because a lot of people have pointed out that the soundtrack of the film is very difficult to hear, and some people have speculated that might have been done on purpose. Others have said that we're going to get a cleaned up version one day. You know,
I think every time Nolan releases a movie, they moan about the sound mix.
Yeah.
And they say, "Oh, you know, it's a mistake, and we'll fix it." It's like, it's gone beyond that now. That's how he likes his movies.
I guess so. But the time travel stuff rather got lost in the mix for me in Tenet. I think there's so much going on, and none of it seemed to make a lot of sense. And it just didn't work for me at all.
I'm in a similar camp. It didn't work for me, but it certainly had a unique look at how they were going to do time travel with the backwards fighting and things like that.
Yeah.
That was something we hadn't seen before.
Yeah.
I don't think it looks as cool as they think it looks.
I think the idea was good, but then the execution of it, I thought, was very, very poor.
Yeah.
The backward scenes were just laughable in places.
Yeah, I thought so too, but I don't think that it wasn't. I think they were thinking, we've got the new bullet time.
Yeah, this is the new Matrix.
It wasn't quite that, so. But, you know, they had a good start at it. You know, we don't get many time travel movies, not frequently, I guess. Donnie Darko?
Yes.
I think that was quite a standout in the last 20 years.
Sure.
That was a really unique look at time travel, and particularly how they filmed it and the effects it's had on the characters.
Yeah. That's a classic example, I think, of a film where the drama takes precedence. The time travel sort of kick-starts the drama, but then the drama takes precedence.
Yes.
Very much so. It becomes a story-driven film.
Yeah, no, I agree.
To the point where you sort of don't think, if the title Donnie Darko flashes into your head, if it happened to do so, you know, you wouldn't immediately think of that as a time travel film.
No.
You'd think of it, oh, it's that film with Jake Gyllenhaal and the Weird Rabbit.
Yeah.
And it's a film that people tend not to think about. You don't think about that or talk about it alongside Back to the Future, do you?
No, exactly. But I think it's because it's a different movie, and the things that people remember about it are far outstripped the time travel elements. Obviously, I'm saying it's not been that many time travel movies. Only the biggest movie of all time was built around time travel, with Avengers Endgame. Which they took an interesting approach to time travel. They had the MacGuffin of it's in particle accelerating let's go, guys. They had the sort of like MacGuffin style execution, but they completely had a different approach that most movies take to time travel in a sort of the grandfather paradox element. So where if you go back and change something, it affects the future, it affects yours. They took a different approach to saying, like, well, if you go back in time, you can change it. But your timeline, you won't die, because your timeline is completely separate.
Yeah.
And it's like, that takes some confusing when you've got whole generations of, like, Back to the Future. That's what time travel is.
There are time travel rules.
But
there shouldn't be.
Yeah, because
a dramatist.
Yeah.
I mean, time travel doesn't exist. sorry, guys, anyone listening to this, time travel doesn't exist, and we don't think it ever will. So a dramatist should be able to take it on board, and they sort of can't, because there are these laid down rules.
It's kind of like the Asimov's law of robotics.
Exactly.
It always
gets
put into robot films, or robots they can't harm the humans.
I'm going to invent a robot for my next script or my next story, and it can do what the hell I want it to.
I'm inventing a killing robot. I want it to kill things. That's what we do as a race. A human race.
If you're talking about fantastical concepts, I don't limit yourself.
But
time travel often does, and it's interesting to see something that sort of expands on that a bit and says, no, we can go down this route, we can do this.
Yeah, it was an interesting angle to take on such a big movie as well, to take that leap and say, oh no, time travel doesn't work like that. All the way that you think it works, doesn't work like that, it works like this, and that's how we're saying that, so.
Yeah,
carry on.
Yeah. Are we including time loops as a time travel device? Because you know, where do you draw the line? What is time travel and what isn't? Because a film's Groundhog Day is of course a classic, but it's still to this day a very influential film. There were still films coming out. The films have come out in the past couple of years.
Yeah, we had a couple of horror movies recently. Happy Death Day.
There've been a few rom-coms recently that have done the time loop thing. And
50 First Dates is Adam Sandler's one.
So I think Groundhog Day is proving to be a lasting and a very influential movie. Is it a time travel film?
It's a time travel film. Whether there's a time travel device, it's back in the traditionalist manner of falling asleep and waking up. And everything's gone back to how it was 24 hours ago. Because it's that kind of time travel. It's Rip Van Winkle, it's Mark Twain. It's those kind of traditionalists in a similar way to Richard Matheson, Somewhere in Time, where it's slightly different, where he basically goes into a room and falls asleep, and then the room is decorated with period pieces.
Yeah.
And then he wills himself.
Yeah, so it's that time. Yeah.
I think this is a similar thing. It's like, even though he's not willing himself, something needs to change in this person. The time won't let him go until he makes that change. But as I say, it does happen quite a lot.
There's a couple of recent sort of looper films, and these have gone down the rom-com route. It seems quite interesting that rom-coms and romantic, sort of emotionally driven films are taking this Groundhog Day concept on. Because Groundhog Day is a love story ultimately anyway, isn't it? It's a Bill Murray comedy, but it's a romantic comedy. But there's a couple of recent titles, a film called Palm Springs, and there's one called The Map of Tiny Perfect Things, which have done that loop idea, but they've done it involving couples, and it's been, how does this affect the couple that have caught up in the loop, which is a sort of spin on Groundhog Day, because Groundhog Day has got the central character meeting the same girl time and time again, but she isn't part of the travelling within the room herself. I think recent films like the two I mentioned there have taken that on and said, what if we had a couple that were involved? So it's a sort of development on that, a riff on that.
It's funny, it's also a genre where you think time travel, you think Back to the Future, you think Terminator, you think those kind of movies. But I'm willing to bet it's probably more romantic dramas involving time travel than any other genre.
I think so. The animated film, the Japanese animation, Your Name.
Oh, you got an A. Yes, Your Name. It's the girl left through time as well.
That's interesting because it seems to be Freaky Friday. It seems to be that sort of vice versa sort of concept of the body swap.
Yeah.
And then there's the extra twist of, oh no, it's also a time travel film. And again, it's once you've established, it's vice versa, it's Freaky Friday, it's that type of the body swap thing, and it's happening across a distance, which we've seen in other films. There have been, again, a couple of romantic dramas where people have been, we the audience, sense that there's this burgeoning romance going on at a distance. Suddenly, the rug's pulled out, and you find out, oh, that character's living 3 years ago or something, or 300 years ago. So, we then get this idea that not only is it a body swap movie, it's a time travel movie, and then it's a sort of romance as well. It's got this sort of quality to it.
One of the big ones the last few years was The Time Traveler's Wife.
Yeah.
In the books, but also made into a movie as well. That was a big hit. It's called The Time Traveler's Wife, it's in the title. But there's been quite a lot over the past few years about time.
That's a weird one, because again, what you've got there is the idea of time travel as an inherent trait. It's a characteristic within the male members of a family line.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a biological thing.
Well, that's the other area I wanted to touch on, because there is quite a few biological time travel movies. So you think, like, obviously Quantum Leap is probably one of the big ones, where he leaps into another person's body and lives their life. There's the Trances, Love Would You, Child Band.
Which we love,
absolutely. Yeah. But he travels back through generations of his own timeline.
Yeah.
And inhabits the body of his great granddad or something like that. You know, so it's a very unusual way of doing it.
Yeah, so the stuff that Michael J. Fox has to pretend to be doing in Back to the Future, he's doing for real.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the time travel device in Trances is like an injection. You know,
it could work as well as any of the others.
Exactly, it's as plausible as anything else we've been talking about today.
One that I love is Francis Coppola's Peggy Sue Got Married,
mm-hmm.
where we talked about this on the Kathleen Turner podcast, but let's talk about it again, because Kathleen just sells that film. It shouldn't work, and her physicality shouldn't work, but she manages within her performance to convince you that she's 25 years younger.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though she's physically, she still appears to be in the same body. The sort of gleam and the excitement within her performance as she travels back to 1960 is just palpable.
Yeah, that was always the fun of watching Quantum Leap, because it was the bit where he looked in a mirror. And saw what he really looked like, you know. Yes, we're seeing Scott Bakula as Sam Beckett traveling through time, but what does he really look like? Oh my God, he's John F. Kennedy, or he's Stephen King, or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
He's gone back in time.
Yeah. There's another film that I'd like to talk about. It's a period set one, and this introduces the concept of possible fake or mistaken time travel. It's a film called Miss Morrison's Ghost. It's from the early 80s. It was made for ITV. And it was shown as a sort of two-hour TV movie.
I've never heard of this one.
Wendy Hiller and Hannah Gordon are the stars of it. And it's based on a real story. It's based on, it's called the Moberly-Jourdain Incident. And it was two university academics at Oxford in the early part of the 20th century. The story happens in 1901. And the main drama is that they're trying to get accepted as women. They're trying to make their way up the sort of Oxford University hierarchy. And they're also vying for jobs within that between themselves, you know. And one's sort of got a higher job than the other, and there's this sort of rivalry going on. But they're friends, you know, and they sort of travel together. And they go to Paris in 1901. And all this really happens. While they're in Paris, they're having a great time, they go and visit Versailles, and they think that they have gone back about 120 years in time to the court of Marie Antoinette. And they come back out of that, they go back home to Oxford, and they sort of tell everyone, they report this at the university. And people, of course, think they're insane, you know. They think, well, nonsense, that's never happened. It's theorised within the film itself and in general within the real case, it's theorised they may have stumbled upon a costume party or something where people were dressed in costumes of the court of King Louis XVI. The only thing that sort of adds any credence to their story is that one of the women claims to have heard and remembered and could sing and play a piece of music from that time. And when she mentioned this, researchers looked into it and they couldn't find any record of the music other than the sheet music. And it's believed that this music was written for the French court at that time and then was shelved and never played. So how has she's gone back in time and has heard this music that no one's heard for 120 years. So that's the one element in that true story. That sort of asked me. Well, what interests me about the film is that I read it as being fake. I read it as being a costume drama, and I'm interested in that concept of people who think they've travelled in time and haven't. I don't think that's been used enough in movies. I think that made a great comedy. You know, this one's done straight and it plays the facts straight. But what a great idea for a send-off, you know, a sort of more comic take on something like that.
Yeah, I feel like the Simpsons are probably done it.
Maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Had a bag on the head, waking up in the future. Oh my god, it's the future. You're something.
Yeah.
Like a Wizard of Oz kind of thing.
Yeah. But, it's just another spin on time travel is what if someone thought they travelled in time and they really haven't?
Yeah, and anything else you want to flag up,
favourites? As people who listen to the podcast know, I'm big on horror films, and Alan goes right along with that too. Horror has used time travel really interestingly. Obviously, Happy Death Day we've already mentioned, which is brilliant, which then did a sequel because we retained the Happy Death Day title, but went off in a more science fiction, more hard scientific time travel.
Okay. I've not seen those movies. I should try and track them down.
Happy Death Day is fantastic. The sequel has got its fans. I'm not so keen because it drifts away from the sort of slasher movie thing a little bit. But yeah, the first one I love because it really knows its slasher movie cliches, but it also plays around with them. It becomes one of those very sweet slasher movies, much like The Final Girls and things like that. Even The Final Girls itself can be seen as a time travel film of sorts, where the characters are watching a film, in the 2010s, and then a fire breaks out in the cinema, and their only escape is to go through the cinema screen, and in doing so, they end up in the film that they're watching, which is from a slasher movie from the mid-80s. No one talks about The Final Girls being a time travel film, but it's sort of, it always gets compared with things like Pleasantville and Purple Rose of Cairo, but it's a time travel film. You know, it's time traveling not just back to a time, but back to a fiction.
Yeah.
Of its time, you know, and I think that's quite an interesting twist. The biggie, of course, I suppose, is The Shining, which, again, nobody thinks about as a time travel film until they get to that very last shot and you think, oh, hang on, this is a time travel film, isn't it? You know.
Yeah, I'm still like convinced myself, but yeah.
And, There's a pretty awful anthology film called Tales of Witness Madness, which if we're talking about weird time travel machinery and means of doing it, a time traveling penny farthing in that one. So
wow, yeah, okay,
there's a first.
Well, yeah. speaking of like devices and things like that, one of my favourites is the Jack the Ripper Through Time.
Time after time.
With David Warner playing Jack Ripper, yeah. And
Malcolm McDowell playing H.G. Wells himself. It's all true.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I think that's a great, I mean, if you're talking about a wonderfully pulled approach to time travel, I remember, it's not the same, but when Avatar was coming out and James Cameron was talking about 3D, and he was saying, like, Piranha 3D shouldn't be allowed to exist. Because that's not what 3D is. 3D should be like Avatar, where we're treating it properly, making it. And I think sometimes it's time travel is a little bit like that, where it's like, it's a proper genre, and it's like, yeah, but we've got serial killers traveling through time. How many is that?
We like the bad stuff.
That's the immediate go-to for a pulp filmmaker, I guess, in the 60s, 70s, 80s. It was like, well, yeah, but, you know, can we not do a pulp version of that where we've got killers or we've got serial killers or killer robots for the future or something like that?
Yeah. And Time After Time is one of those films that you sort of watch on a knife edge because you're not only because of the tension of the plot, but because you as an audience member are thinking, this is one of those ideas that could fall over at any moment. This could actually all go completely wrong. And I'm watching it, hoping it doesn't, you know. And so far, it's gone pretty well. And so far, it's continuing to go well. And I just hope this carries on throughout the movie. And boy, does it. What an entertaining film. But it could have, it's the sort of film that could have easily been a disaster, I think.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Even then, it would have been one of those ones where we'd go back and watch the same way as we watched, like, Dracula in 1972.
I guess so,
yeah. Like, this is crazy plot, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's like a Buckaroo Banzai or something like that, where you, just, like, you explain the plot to them and they're like, what?
I know, but we love it. We love it. Yeah, we need to see Buckaroo Banzai in more films. We need to see him travelling in time. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the other one I really want to flag up is old friends of Paris Cinema and Derby Film Festival is Lars Nissan from who made the wonderful Leon Must Die.
We
played at Derby Film Festival a few years ago. That's available, I'm sure, on Amazon Prime and places like that. So do check that one out because it's a really wonderful, low-budget time travel movie.
Definitely. And having mentioned The Shining as well, I just want to throw in a film that I saw 2 weeks ago and can't stop talking about. I don't think you've seen it yet. Last Night in Soho, which, again, isn't being talked about necessarily as being a time travel film. I think it is in the same way as The Shining. You know, it's got time travel as one of its many, 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 many layers. And, it's if you've seen the trailer for the film, if you've not seen the movie itself yet, you'll know there's this sort of, you know, 2020s to 1960s thing going on in it. And again, it's time travel done in an unconventional way.
Mm-hmm.
And if there is a time-travelling device in that film, it's difficult to say exactly how it happens, but it appears there's a time-travelling bed in that film.
Well,
it's not entirely certain, but it's the only thing in the film that appears to be making it all happen and all work.
Again, that's a traditionalist kind of time travel. You go to sleep and wake up in a different time.
I guess so, yeah.
Device. I mean, the one more one I want to flag up is that it's a book, however, it's actually being adapted into a TV series by Elizabeth Moss, and that's The Shining Girls by Lauren Mutes. Wonderful, pulpy time travel serial killer book about a Depression era serial killer who travels through time killing people.
Wow. So, again, riffing on David Warner time after time.
It's going to be interesting. I mean, the books are going to approach that. It's going to be on Apple TV, and it's Elizabeth Moss is starring in that, so it's going to get some profile. Leonardo DiCaprio's production company. So
that's going to be big.
Going to be a high end one, yeah. So
one more interesting take on time travel I want to get in is Vincent Ward's film, The Navigator. Vincent Ward is the guy who was going to make Alien 3 and got bumped off because he came up with this idea of a wooden planet populated by monks and all this crazy stuff they were doing in the third Alien film, some of which I think gets retained in the real Alien 3, to be fair. You know, but it would have been great to see Vincent's take on it before then. And I think the film that got him the Alien gig initially was this film called The Navigator. And it's an Australian-New Zealand co-production, made in 1988, but it's set initially in Cumbria during the Black Plague in the 14th century. And the villagers in this Cumbrian village decide they're going to start tunnelling through the earth as a means of sort of looking for some kind of cure from plague or whatever the plague plot is. You know, they end up emerging from their tunnels in the modern day and not knowing where they are and approaching this shift of like 600 years or whatever it is, 700 years, approaching that like a medieval quest. So the big scene in the film is Vincent Ward said that he'd been sitting stuck in traffic on an autobahn one day in Germany and idly started musing, what if I was from the Middle Ages and all this was surrounding me? And that's what triggered off this idea for this film, The Navigator. And the big scene in the film is a scene where the intrepid party from the 14th century suddenly come across a modern dual carriageway motorway. And they have to, they figure that the only way they can avoid these great metallic, fast-moving beasts that are driving up and down the road, you know, travelling up and down this pathway in front of them. It is to act as though it's like a huge chasm that they've got to cross. They basically got to build a bridge or something like that. So they're all sort of roping themselves together and forming like a human chain and stuff to try and get over into the middle lane and then get beyond that, you know. And again, it's a time travel film where the time travel, there isn't a time travel device, other than they dig a tunnel,
you know.
But it's what happens once they've travelled is the interesting stuff, and the sort of shift over the centuries, and it's a rare case of characters from the past travelling forward as well. You don't get all that often.
No, I mean the one that I can't believe we got mentioned so far that does that and plucks characters from their timelines into the future is Bill and Ted.
Of course,
we haven't done Bill and Ted.
Yeah.
Bill and Ted.
Now they've got their own TARDIS.
They have. They get their own phone. Wonder where they got the idea for that from. And they bring back all the famous historical characters.
Yeah.
And plant them in a valley setting. You know?
Which is such a brilliant idea.
Brilliant.
And works so well. Mm. What I love about Bill and Ted, and when he does that, is that the characters from the past, and they're all well-known historical figures as well. It's not just Joe Bloggs, is it?
No,
that's
not, yeah.
And so they bring back all these famous people from the past. And I love the fact that they adapt to modern living,
which is great.
Because it would be so easy to do that fish out of water thing. But it's so much better to say, hey, you know, I think this modern stuff's cool. You know,
yeah.
This is great. Say he's Napoleon or somebody.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I love that.
It's always one of those franchises where I think the first film is a really good film, and the second ones and the third one don't really have that same coherency, but they're much more reliant on the gags and the fun of it.
Yeah.
But that first movie is just pure brilliantly written. Plot-wise, you know, story-wise.
The scenes I love are towards the end, where they're actually leaving stuff in the police station. They're using time travel. They're owning it, you know, in a way that most characters don't.
No.
This, coming back to Time After Time, I think that's the difference between H.G. Wells and Jack the Ripper in that movie. H.G. Wells is terrified of his own time machine. Jack the Ripper loves it, and he loves modern day Los Angeles, and H.G. Wells hates it and can't get to grips with it. And Bill and Ted are sort of, Bill and Ted's like the Jack the Ripper of time travel movies, in that it's a, our characters are going to own this.
Yeah.
They're going to deal with this, and they're going to use it to their own advantage. Whereas most other time travel movies, your characters are a little bit worried and a little bit sort of furrowed brow. How am I going to get back to my own time? How am I going to get back home? What's going to happen to me here, you know, in the future or centuries into the past, you know? What are the dangers? What are the pitfalls? And Bill and Ted are just like, we'll deal with it.
Well, Bill and Ted, it doesn't happen very often in movies, because movies aren't written, don't tend to be written by 18-year-olds or something like that. But they have that wonderful sort of arrogance of youth, where it's just like, oh, we don't mind. We'll look at the time machine, go back in time, it's fine.
Yeah.
What? You know, go back and we'll need to fix this.
There's
some chewing gum, we'll fix the time rotary device, and then, we'll jump in time again. It's just that belief that they can do anything and they're invincible.
Yeah.
Really comes across in that script.
And that's written into the storyline as well, because they're told by people from the future that, you are invincible. You're our gods, you know.
Cool. Any more time travel films? I think we're pretty much done.
I think we're about done. I just want to maybe slip in another very, very weird one, which is, you mentioned Dracula AD 72 earlier on. While we're on Hammer horror films, my all-time favourite Hammer horror and one of my all-time favourite films is The Devil Rides Out. And again, it's not a time travel movie. It's a devil worship, a cult Satanism movie. But has it got a mad time travel ending or what?
Yeah. Cool, we'll go and check that one out. I think I'm done. I think the diary and butterfly effect is quite an interesting device to utilise.
Yeah.
But I think we've pretty much covered everything. Can we end on Van Damme?
I think we've got to.
We've got to end on Van Damme.
Yeah.
I think Van Damme's time cop is worthy of mentioning this. I think with that one, it's kind of definitely the idea of time travel being in the government's hands.
Yeah.
Which a lot of the ones we've talked about, it's like Bill and Ted, you know, careening through space, or it's you know, H.G. Wells inventing a time machine.
It's often mavericks that are either in control of the time travel or cause it or invent it.
Yeah,
you know, yeah. Here it's different.
Yeah, here I mean, you definitely got the idea that that rocket sled crash test dummy style thing being the time travel device works really well for like government department, the Black Ops CIA operation that's happening. And that's worthy of mentioning. Too many of those.
And I suppose one last time loop one we've not mentioned is Edge of Tomorrow, the Tom Cruise I really, really like. And again, has characters that do a Bill and Ted. They Bill and Ted play with time travel. Tom Cruise plays with the time loop in this one, in the way that Bill Murray does in Groundhog Day, ultimately. And it's great to see these characters in the time loop movies sort of learning that process. I love that. But you get the best of both worlds there. You get the caution and you get the worry in the opening half of the film. And then halfway through, it suddenly clicks with them. And it's like, oh, I can use this to my advantage. Yeah. You know, I can do stuff. You know?
It is interesting how the time loop movie has become its own genre.
Yeah.
In the world.
Within the subgenre itself. Yeah.
That's fascinating. Cool, thank you very much. That is all from us today. Don't forget you can do your own form of time travel by checking out the Archive Cinelit podcasts. Don't forget to like us on Facebook, and if you so desire, subscribe to our Patreon, where you get a bonus episode that is exclusive to Patreon subscribers for at least 6 months. In fact, this very episode is a bonus one. So if you're a subscriber, well done you. You're listening now. If not, what are you waiting for? You listen to this in the future. And remember, time waits for no man. See you soon.